Thanks for joining us here in the Coral Laundromat Studio for Weather and Ag in Focus. Glad you're here. It's been a big week for ag. Just wrapped up Big Iron. Most of us just barely got the dust off our shoes before we had to get into the next event, and it has been very good. Thank you to Hurley and Associates for inviting me up to NDSU this morning. I had the opportunity to get in front of students who are looking at going to the career fair, and we talked about resume writing and getting jobs and what it's like to have internships and why they are so very important. So if you have students who are looking forward into their career, just remind them with internships, you're shopping for a job, they're shopping for an employee, and it's a wonderful benefit for both. I am happy to talk about the fact that here in September, we are going to be visiting a tremendous amount about Suicide Prevention Month, and we are focusing on our farm community. Thank you to the sponsors, Prairie St. John's, Maple River Grain and Agronomy, Valley Christian Counseling, as well as Gowan USA. With all of the things that are happening economically right now in ag, farmers, ranchers, our input suppliers, everyone from fertilizer and equipment, it weighs heavily on everyone. And each Thursday, we take the time to talk about where are the help and the resources for each person. Because you may not feel comfortable reaching out to ask, and you certainly may not know where to start for someone that you care about. And so stick with us every Thursday, again, as we talk about our September series, Suicide Prevention Month, focusing on our farmers. Throughout the day today, if you have questions, you can reach us on the JLA Insurance phone line. That is 701-293-9000. We would be happy to have you call in with your comments and your questions, especially as we move into segments with our guests. And because it's been a busy week, I wanted to make sure to just recap for all of our sponsors who have been a big part of Here We Grow through this fall. ND Estate Services, Thor Building, as well as Red River Retention Authority, Gowan USA. We also had some help this year from Ellingson Company, as well as Kodiak Fuels, and we planted Peterson Farm Seed for our wheat. And again, for those who are wondering, we did hit a 51 bushel yield out there in the field. So those are some of the housekeeping things we got to take care of, but we're going to start a little bit early with our guest today. Dean is off taking care of some breaking weather. He'll be joining us after a little bit to update us on what's been happening. But we are joined today in studio by a couple of folks on a very pertinent topic that's been going on as of late, especially after we had the WASDE report today and we just had general conversations about the corn and soybean markets. We are joined by Justin Sherlock. He was with the North Dakota Soybean Growers Association, and Jim Thompson with the North Dakota Soybean Council, and both are in studio. And Jim, I wanted to ask you to start, if you could just introduce yourself, who you are, where you're at in production here in North Dakota.
Sure. Thanks, Bridget. I'm Jim Thompson from Bipage, North Dakota. I farm just northwest of Ayer in northwest Cass County. I'm serving my second year as chairman of North Dakota Soybean Council. And we raise corn, soybeans, wheat, and usually dryable beans. However, we lost ours this year in the June 20th storm. So,
were those all just blown out? What happened?
Combination wind, hail, and at the right stage, it's just a little too fragile.
Did you also lose any storage this year?
We did not. The farmstead is protected by quite a tree belt, and that took the brunt of it. Also, don't have any tall storage facilities on our farm, okay. So we're okay there. But we'll be utilizing every bin on the farm.
I bet you will. And also then Justin Sherlock is with us, and he represents North Dakota Soybean Growers Association. And so, Justin, if you could go ahead and give us the same background.
Yeah, I'm from Daisy, North Dakota, a big metropolis of 76 people, roughly. And I have the title of former mayor of Daisy. And former mayor is one of those best titles out there. The word former, it's like township officers. You almost never get out, but I did my 8 years. But, farmer on the Wimbledon Courtney area there, got to say soybeans first. Soybeans, corn, wheat, barley, edible beans, depending on the year, just a wide variety of crops. And, this is my second year as president with the association. We focus on the policy side more so.
Thank you. I was going to ask for that definition. You are very much policy.
Yep. The association is a membership organization. So mm-hmm. we ask farmers, hey, become a member of our association. That way we can go to Bismarck, Washington, D.C., and overseas, work on this trade issues and a lot of the policy side.
Excellent. And versus what Jim does,
I'm on the checkoff side.
Okay.
So we collect the federal checkoff, and half of it stays in North Dakota. Half of it goes to United Soybean Board.
And all of that is for developing markets?
So we are market development, We are research and we are outreach and education.
Excellent. One of the topics that we were discussing before we even got on air was, you guys want to do a little fall burn down in some fields this year? And Justin said, if it's not raining, Dean, this is your cue to come on in and join us now.
If it's not raining.
Okay. All right. What you got?
So we've had some nice dry weather. Bad news is now, so we're getting into a stormy part of our, what we call our LRC cycle. So over the next week to 10 days, we're expecting widespread rain across all of the Dakotas, North, South Dakota, on the range of about 1 to 2 inches. Now, the heavier amounts look to be in the central and western part of the state with lighter amounts here. But again, if you get caught under any individual thunderstorm, look at Devil's Lake. Just the other day picked up 2 to 3 inches of rain in a very short period of time while surrounding areas really didn't get much at all. But over the next week to 10 days, we are getting into that stormy part of the cycle where we're going to pick up, you know, and that's not great news. We could use some moisture, but just the timing of it, not the best. Unfortunately.
Yeah. Now, did you mention also there are some severe storms happening out west? What's the implication for us in the east side of the state?
We're fine here. They've got tornado warnings out around the Williston area, tornadoes on the ground, mainly in rural areas. For our area, we're quiet. There's a little bit of rain in the southern valley extending into southern lakes country. But we're going to have a pretty dry weekend until we get to Sunday, Sunday evening. Into Monday, we could get some heavier rainfall around here. We'll see a break Tuesday, and then another storm system comes at us Wednesday and Thursday of next week, and then it looks like a break, and then another one for the latter part of the weekend. So these storms are kind of lined up here, and like I said, it's going to be like this for about the next week to 10 days.
All right. So part of the reason for having the guys in today is we want to talk about the soybean market at this point. And let's maybe back up. 50% of our audience is non-farming public. And so they might be curious, why are we as farmers right now in this industry so very concerned where we stand in commodity pricing for soybeans? Who wants to start with that at this point?
Well, I guess I can jump in a little.
Start a little bit there so we understand what's going on for everyone.
You know, and both of us work in this arena in different areas, but historically, North Dakota, 80% of the soybeans we grew were put on a shuttle train. You know, that's those 110-car long trains. Mm-hmm. They went to the Pacific Northwest, you know, Oregon, Washington State, got put on a ship, and they went to Southeast Asia, primarily China. Now we have two crush plants in the state, so we can crush about half the soybeans we grow in North Dakota, but that means the other half still have to be exported. Plus, the meal that comes out of those crush plants is still largely exported as well. And in case your audience hasn't heard, there's a little trade issues going on right now that are affecting the ability to move those soybeans. So right now, because of some of the tariffs the United States has put on China, China issued a retaliatory tariff against the United States on soybeans. Essentially, China has bought zero soybeans for 2025 crop year. So, you know, we're usually sending half our crop out to the PNW. There are no soybeans moving right now, and harvest is getting ready to start in the next week or two. That's a big problem.
Now, is government trying to do anything to maybe soften that? Are they thinking about maybe easing up on the tariffs for China so we can get rid of the soybeans? Or,
well, you know, that's all above my pay level. But I mean, we have on our side, you know, on the association, we've had regular contact with our congressional delegation. We've had meetings. You know, Congresswoman Fedorchak helped arrange a meeting with the USTR, U.S. Trade Representative. They know the situation here. They know the problems we're up against. So I think they do know the situation. I think they're just trying to figure out how can, you know, this is a big picture. We know there's trade issues with China we have to resolve, but they're still one of our largest customers. All of our other export channels combined don't add up to what China buys from us in a typical year. So we have to fix the trade relationship with China. We're running out of time. We know it's a big issue, but, you know, we've been pushing for let's get an agriculture-specific deal. Maybe that's the ask we're making. I don't know if it's possible, but that's what we're advocating for right now.
Now, is there anybody else we can sell them to? Brazil or is China? I mean, you said China's our main purchaser.
They're
anybody
bigger by
else?
A lot.
Well, so to back up just a little bit, you know, North Dakota, we're in a unique situation here because we're not river adjacent like the other soybean producing areas of the country. Right. So we have depended in the last 30 years of developing our infrastructure, and local elevators and the railroads have all spooled up to get these soybeans out to the PNW, Pacific Northwest, where they're loaded on ships and taken to Southeast Asia. So you've got China. Now we're trying to get into Indonesia. We're getting into Thailand, Vietnam. The problem is, it took us 30, 40 years to spool up for China. It's going to take long a time to get into those markets as well, because infrastructure-wise, they're not set up to receive the volume of beans that China's been taking. So yeah, we are actively always looking, especially from the checkoff side, investing checkoff dollars into these emerging markets. And not just Southeast Asia. I mean, we're looking elsewhere around the world. And anywhere we can get beans in, the other thing is we got to think about is, like Justin mentioned, we got to get rid of this meal too. So we sent a trade team to Canada this last winter to say, hey, you've got animal egg up here. You're going to need some feed. How about some, you know, soybean meal going to Canada? Obviously, all these trade partnerships are pretty fragile right now. But we're always looking and always looking ahead.
Oh, there's a lot of those details that we want to talk about. And I appreciate you guys giving a background. I mean, half of our audience is non-farming. And we need them to understand. Because when you're going to Washington, D.C., and you're talking politically why we need help, it's very important for our public to also understand, besides farmers, what we're trying to accomplish. We're going to talk about that and a lot more when we return. Stay with us, because after the American Ag Network's update on the livestock market, as usual, I have a list of questions and we'll get started on those. We'll be back. Thank you so much for being here today as we talk about the soybean market and impacts. We have joining us Justin Sherlock. He is with the North Dakota Soybean Growers Association, and Jim Thompson, North Dakota Soybean Council. For those of you who have questions as you're listening today, you can reach us on the JLA Insurance phone line, 701-293-9000. And we hope you're following the live stream. We are on Facebook, YouTube, as well as Acres TV. On that list of questions that I created, guys, one of the things Jim mentioned was having a winter excursion. And I shouldn't say excursion. That makes it sound like it was, you know, not business, but it really was. Y'all took a trade mission up to Canada to talk about where can the meal go for livestock operations. Have you seen some headway as of yet? Addison, do we have all the mics on? Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
There we go.
Yeah, so kind of the reason that we're pursuing that a little bit more is because of now with the two crush plants in proximity to Canada, obviously there's going to be some Canadian beans probably coming in, or at least there were.
Yes.
And natural for a truck driver is he wants to take something back with him. So they were backloading meal. So we were seeing some meal going back up into Canada. We're just trying to pursue and see what other avenues, you know, that meal can take and where else that meal might be. Could we possibly rail it into Canada somewhere besides, you know, just trucking it in? So, I think we're still in communications with a lot of the people we visited with. Mm-hmm. And it'd be interesting, curious to see in the, you know, the coming few months what happens there.
As soybean producers, y'all have a vested interest in us having more livestock operations in the States as well. And thank you for that and for giving that support, because animal agriculture in North Dakota should grow. There is a place for us here. And we certainly are able to supply plenty of feedstuffs, one of them just being the soybean meal that we could be using. Now, with soybeans, we see the market development that's happened. You have turf. You have a spray-on for shingles to extend their life. You've got Goodyear tires. Are there other marketplaces that can even begin to make up the difference of what we are not exporting right now?
I don't know that there's one particular market that could fill the void that China leaves, but I think you really have to look at the renewable fuels as a budding industry that could potentially be a huge end user of the soybean oil. A lot of our soybean oil is already leaving the state, and it's destined for refineries already. So, yeah, I mean, but again, that's one of those industries that's going to take a long time to spool up, but it is ultimately a good end use for soybean oil.
Absolutely. We want to continue to see that growth. Often I have said that Brazil needs to have a bad weather year for us to have a great successful crop. What have you guys seen right now that's coming out of Brazil? I've read some reports as of just this morning about their weather and their crop.
Well, they're growing their acreage every year. Mm-hmm. They're producing more and more beans. And you know, that's one of the things when we talk about these trade issues, the longer we drag this stuff out, we're just handing that market share to Brazil and other South American countries. So we have to get these trade relations fixed. As Jim said with the biofuels, you know, we're still going to have to export the meal. So trade, no matter what, even if we grow animal agriculture, we're going to have to export the animal, the meat products.
Right.
We need trade. Trade is good for agriculture. And it's been very beneficial the last few decades. And we're going to grow that biofuels industry. we're going to do all the things to grow this industry, but that all takes time. And
yes.
Brazil is ready to fill the void if we don't get these trade relationships fixed. So that's why it's so important to do that now.
And the countries they're exporting to are not afraid to invest in infrastructure down there, roads, ports, et cetera, to make sure that happens.
They're not. But, you know, we met with recently, you know, I was in Washington, D.C. at a soy trade event and met with a Chinese delegation. And they, some of them came here to North Dakota to visit, too. The Chinese and other buyers still want to do business with us. They express that they want to buy from us. We're cheaper than Brazilian beans right now,
mm-hmm.
until you put the tariffs on. So if we can resolve these trade issues, they don't want to be dependent on one supplier. Yes, Brazil right. has grown their production to where they can almost meet China's total demand, but China doesn't want to depend on one supplier either for their food. That's not security to them either. They want multiple suppliers. So.
None of us want to depend on just one supplier.
Right. And you know, we've perhaps been too reliant on one main customer, but again, that customer buys more soybeans than all of our other export customers combined. So you don't just replace that overnight, and that's some of the challenge we face. So people say, oh, just grow something different next year. Well, what are we going to grow? Are we going to grow more corn and flood that market, or grow more wheat and flood that? It's not as easy as just, oh, flip a switch and grow something different, because none of them right now make economic sense, even without the trade war.
So that was one of the questions I wanted to ask. We are in an incredibly agriculturally diverse state. Normally, we can raise barley. We can talk about dry edible beans. But when all of us need to make a switch, it just overwhelms our marketplace. I mean, as two producers who raised soybeans this year, what are you going to do next year? Do you know?
we're laughing because I don't know what I'm going to plant next year. I mean, it'll be some of the same, but my crop mix will probably change some. But I also have a rotation. I usually, this is when I'm buying fertilizer and seed. And,
yes.
And Jim, you can speak too on it. I'm sure you're in the same boat. I don't know what to grow next year. I really do not.
So
I hope I get a loan next year.
And you don't even know what to buy right now for next year.
No, I have no idea.
No, and depending on what you've been raising the last few years, if you've got a certain herbicide in your mix,
uh-huh.
if you've got carryover concerns, you can't just switch for next year. That's a 2-3 year process that you need to, you know, look forward to.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then again, okay, I'm going to raise barley and sunflowers and dry beans instead. Well, are there contracts available?
Yeah, where's my market?
How do you prove what you're going to make as income? You know, how do you prove that to the bank? It's not just easy as, oh, I'll grow something else.
And additionally, what's your distance to market? Because we can't overlook transportation costs. If you are raising sunflowers, great if you can just run them down to Enderland. But if you're further away, what does that add to your overall cost of the market or of production? Dean, you look like you were wondering, what were we talking about?
Well, I was going to ask, okay, let's say we get this tariff situation fixed soon. Would that help your situation on what you guys are going to plant next year?
Well, I mean, it would provide some security down the road.
Okay.
Justin, I've been cautioning people that just because we get a trade deal, don't expect futures to jump $2 tomorrow in the market. We still have a glut of soybeans in the world to get rid of
yeah.
and to chew through.
Okay.
So it's going to help locally, that local basis right. throughout the state, which is what we're suffering from right now. So that cash price will improve. I can't really tell you that the futures price is going to jump up. But yes, it would be great looking forward. Right now, it would improve that local cash.
I think the important thing there is if we resolve these trade deals and the tariff issues, at least then we know we've got some certainty to going into next year. Because right now, these soybeans are going to pile up physically on the ground this fall.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, this is a one-year problem right now. But if we don't resolve the trade deal with China and with other countries, you know, a lot of these other deals are close to the finish line, too. Let's get them signed and going. But if we don't resolve this, this could turn a one-year oversupply and storage problem into a multi-year prolonged issue. And all of a sudden now, if farmers can't make it, you're going to see machinery values collapse. You could possibly see land values collapse. And a lot of, especially these young beginning farmers, and even first, second generation guys, there's quite a few of them out there. Myself and
I was
that
just
kind
gonna
of
say
camp
you.
Too. I have you know, historical roots, but my grandparents got out at different time. My dad was able to start farming again. He had some great business partners that let him get in with them. And, you know, guys like me won't survive this if we don't get this resolved and have some certainty in markets to sell to. So we're going to lose those younger beginning farmers first before the, you know, it's going to be bad if we don't get this fixed.
And when you say get this resolved and fixed, in what kind of a time frame? Obviously, the sooner the better. But, I mean, is there a
there are
a
some
time limit.
There are some folks that need to know for this winter.
Yeah,
I think we're going to get renewed.
I think we're talking weeks.
Yes,
because every right now we've now entered the export window when the United States typically sells and exports soybeans to the world. Every week that we're not exporting soybeans right now is a week that we're losing, mm-hmm. and Brazil will have another crop coming in January.
Yes.
So every week we are not exporting beans, that's a week of export sales we're probably losing. And maybe we can ship some a little later, but it's hard to make that up after the fact.
Yeah, the typical soybean program has always, not always, typically been the buyers of North Dakota soybeans have purchases in place throughout the year for usually delivery to the PNW September, October, November.
Yep.
So when we're harvesting, most soybeans have been traveling into the local facilities, loaded on the trains as they come in, shipped out. Elevators usually get themselves almost empty so they can take in the corn harvest. That's just, it's worked, not perfect, but
pretty darn well. Pretty well. We have a system.
For the last few years. And you've actually seen the local basis at harvest get better as they perfected the system. Now all of a sudden, we're a dollar off of that. So it's interrupted this kind of good deal we had going on.
It really has. And when we mentioned Brazil having another crop coming in January, I just want to throw this out before we go to our bottom of the hour news. And that is the fact that with Brazil, we have to remember, I mean, get a map out, look in the size of scope of the continent and that country. Their growing seasons are so much further than ours. They're literally double us. In some cases, they're getting three crops off in a calendar year. There's a reason why their production levels have grown so very much. It really has to do with size and scope versus what we are in the States. We are going to touch on that news. When we return, we'll continue our conversation all about soybeans. You are welcome to call us on the JLA Insurance phone line of 701-293-9000. And today is all about the soybean market. There is so much happening, and we wanted to make sure to cover as much ground as we could today. And we are doing that with our guests, Justin Sherlock with North Dakota Soybean Growers Association and Jim Thompson, North Dakota Soybean Council. One of the things I wanted to make sure to highlight before we get to Dean's question is, Justin, you mentioned just a little off the cuff that we will be piling soybeans this year at harvest. And piling means we're literally baking piles on the ground outside, and those beans are going to be susceptible to the weather in many cases. Weather will drive down quality if we have a bad winter, Dean. I'm talking ice, snow, deer and raccoons crawling up them, the whole nine yards, and that decreases our costs and potential margins as well.
And we won't, like we said, we won't know the winter is holding until we get that new LRC cycle started in early October, but we're getting some early indications that this may be a colder and snowier winter than we've had in the last two winters. So,
and that will affect us.
We'll see how that happens. But my question was, and not to turn it political, but Trump is known, or he's known for being farmer friendly. So, with that being said, what is your idea? Why isn't anything getting done a little quicker? I know there's, like you said, there's more on the table than just the ag community. But if he knows how, or the administration knows how important this is, what's being done to get in his ear saying, hey, you know, we've got to get something figured out here quickly?
Well, and I think, you know, this is where me being in the association role, this is what we do. We focus on that policy piece. So, you know, we've been communicating with our congressional delegation, with the administration, like I said earlier. And I do think the president, you know, whether people supported him or not, mm-hmm. you know, this is where we are now. We knew he was going to pursue tariffs and trade reform when he got reelected. So here's where we are. We can't dwell on, oh, what if, could have. Well, this is where we are. I think that he does understand that we need these markets for our farmers. I think he does understand that. I think the people that work with him, that work for him, they know that. I think this is a bigger geopolitical issue that they're trying to deal with China. And most of us acknowledge there are legitimate trade issues with China we have to resolve. But we have made sure that they know they have been a good customer. They want to be a customer again. So please keep working on this. And I think they will. I think the issue is do we have time to work on that? And, you know, that's why we're going to start talking. You know, there's talk about maybe some aid programs, assistance program things starting, you know, we may have to have that conversation later because the economics, even before the trade war, didn't work in farm country. But we are telling them we need a trade deal first because we physically have to move these piles of beans that Bridget just mentioned before we, you know, it doesn't, otherwise that's going to turn into a multi-year problem. If the beans aren't gone before next year, then now they're going to drag the markets down next year. Right. So,
and you were talking about a trade deal. Has there been any conversation with the administration about, all right, let's lift the tariffs to China, at least in the ag sector?
We've had those conversations, and we were just talking to the new USTR, U.S. Trade Representative's staff the other day, the nominee for chief ag negotiator. And she made the point that that would be great. However, China wants our agricultural products. That is one of the key negotiating tools we have as the United States, is that that's one of the things China really does want from us. So if we just give that up, then we lose some of the other leverage to get maybe some of the IP and, you know, the chips and all the defense stuff that president wants to also pursue. So I think that's why farmers have been supportive and given time, you know, to try and resolve these trade things. But now we are running out of time.
Right.
And that's the message we're sharing with the administration, is the time is now. We need you to focus on a China deal, you know, and we're not trying to ignore our other markets, but China is so important to us. So we need them to work on that China deal.
Literally, like, as you mentioned, some have weeks to start to figure this out already. Farm bankruptcies are double in the first half of 2025 of what they were in its entirety for 2024.
And farm bankruptcies don't tell much of the picture, because banks shut you down before you get to bankruptcy these days.
Yes.
So that's why whenever people talk about farm bankruptcies, it's not really a good indicator, because banks don't let you get to that point anymore. And we're hearing 20-30+% is what we're hearing out there of guys who will not qualify for an operating loan next year under normal circumstances. So that's why we're talking about we got to get these markets reopened, and then we'll look at the economic situation in the coming weeks and months.
But as Jim mentioned, that's also where if your plan has always been that you're going to combine and take those beans to town and sell for cash, that cannot be your plan this year.
Right. You're going to have to utilize every bit of storage you either still have or have to temporarily create. So a lot of producers are going to have to do things that they haven't done in a long time. Use those little small 2,500 bushel bins.
Grandpa's tiny Montgomery Ward bin.
The credit commodity CCC
the
bins.
The pop cans.
CCC bins.
Yeah.
That's right. Pop
I mean,
cans.
These ones that blew across three fields in June, maybe go grab them. I don't know
the
what you're going to
do. Bin Zebo needs walls.
Yes.
We can't do this.
Right? But I also would encourage producers to talk with their co-op, their grain merchandiser, their marketing guru, whoever they're working with. There are tools available, whether it's deferred basis, whether it's, whatever you can do to maybe deliver at harvest. It's not great. It's not the ideal price you want. But if you can't sit on it and can't store it, you have to do something with it. But there are ways to work around this. It's not going to be as profitable as you want, but that's the hand we're dealt right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, but keep the communication open. Don't just put your head in the sand. Talk to your neighbors. Talk to your local grain merchandisers. You know, all those people, because ideas are going to be flowing, and you might do something you haven't done. You may not like it, but you may have to do it this year. You might have to do it again.
But also be honest with your banker.
Right.
I think that's probably the first thing. Is, you know, there's oftentimes I've had bankers in this room with us as we've talked in studio about what are some of their options. You know what? Be honest with your banker. Tell them where you have other financing. Are you financing seed somewhere? Are you financing equipment? They need to see your total picture. And especially those who have been in banking for a while, they may have some ideas and suggestions for you. Those are the guys that you really want to have a good relationship with as well.
Right.
The WASDE report came out today, USDA's report. Impacts, do you see any major impacts as of right now? Were you surprised? Anything like that? Maybe.
Boy, it was a whole, they took down the corn number by 2 bushel. We're still sitting on a huge corn crop.
Huge.
I mean, I don't know if the numbers really did much of anything. It seemed there's probably a little bit of a positive reaction, which it's so confusing right now. Nothing makes sense.
No.
So, take it for what you will. You know, it's just, it's more numbers, more things to talk about, but sometimes we're overloaded with information, and sometimes it doesn't make sense.
And sometimes you need to go back to have that conversation with your contract, with your grain merchandiser, because as we've heard many times, especially this last week, there's a rumor out there that contracts are being turned down. If you had a forward contract on your soybeans, that whomever you did the contract with may be canceling them. They have some new clauses in there since this happened in 2018. Have you put any truth to those rumors?
So we've been reaching out to, you know, several elevators, the Grain Dealers Association. We've been having those conversations because they're our partners too. And, you know, the Grain Dealers Association, they hear from their members.
Absolutely.
As of right now, to the best of our knowledge, there are no elevators that are flat out going to cancel or walk away from contracts. The folks we've talked to said they intend to honor their contracts.
In North Dakota.
In North Dakota.
Thank you.
That they have, if they've purchased soybeans and have a contract with the grower, they're intending to take those. They may not take your overrun beans, or if you don't have a contract, they may not have room for your beans to just show up the day you're harvesting, and your truck may not be able to just show up at the elevator and dump them.
Right.
If you don't have a contract. So that's to Jim's point. You have to be talking to the folks you do business with. These are your business partners. Your banker is your business partner. This is a time to work with those relationships you have built up. This is part of what makes our rural and small communities so great, is we do have personal relationships with the people we do business with. It, you know, it's not just numbers and dollar figures. These are personal relationships as well that usually go back years, decades, generations. You know, again, look out for each other, work with each other. We're going to work through this. It's going to take some time, but we will work through it. It's going to be tough and rough, but again, farmers have been through a lot over the generations in North Dakota. I look at back at the challenges that, you know, those generations before us came through. We will work through this too. This is small, not to say it's small potatoes, but compared to some of the challenges of the past, we can work through it.
It hurts right now, but we can. Mm-hmm. Impact on corn for 2026 with what's happening right now. Any insights? I know my crystal ball is a bit on the smudged side.
What's corn?
What? Yeah, that thing you run through the dryer some years.
You know, Justin alluded to the fact, okay, we don't raise as many soybeans, we raise more corn. Pretty soon, now we're sitting on a pile of corn. We've produced ourselves into another problem.
Yes.
So when you're talking facts and figures and numbers, just for the other 50%, as you stated earlier, to understand the economic of this whole thing, right?
Yes.
China bought almost 917 million bushels of U.S. soybeans last year. 917 million, $12.4 billion worth of goods of soybeans.
And we're not there.
And right now it's zero.
It's
so this marketing year, it's zero.
Yeah.
We've never gone, September 1st is the start of the marketing year.
Yep.
We have never had a year where they have not made a purchase commitment for, you know, so many million metric tons. Even some of the NDSU economists are telling us that their models they use to predict prices and movements, they're moot right now because none of their models can take that variable out of the equation that China's not buying any. So they're like, our models are broken. We don't even know what to tell you.
It
could happen.
And in North Dakota, 2024, 245 million bushels produced. Figure half of that was crushed. About, okay? So take half of that was exported, most of it to China. That's $2.62 billion with a B. Dollars, North Dakota.
Not coming into our state economy.
Yep. And not going where else, down to Main Street.
Then I was just going to say, that fires off everything that happens for Main Street in every community in this town. And you can say, I live in Fargo, it doesn't impact me. Oh, yes, it does. Think about the manufacturing and processing in this town that are related to food production.
And we're hearing more and more layoffs, you know,
agriculture
equipment manufacturers, even the dealerships are starting to lay people off on some of the service side or the sales side.
Yep.
It is having an impact. And it's not just because of the trade issues. As we've alluded, there is just a large supply of corn and soybeans in the world.
Yes.
So we're not going to resolve it overnight by fixing the trade issues, but we still have to fix those first, because if we don't have markets to sell to, this is just going to become an ongoing problem year after year. And we're going to start losing a lot of farms if we don't. We have to have markets to sell to. If you produce something, you have to have a customer to sell to.
As you said, trade before aid. That's what we want. So last point to make, guys, as you said, Justin, other things have happened in the past historically that have been bad, but we can make it through this, right? So those last things you want your fellow farmers, your peers to hear.
I just keep the lines of communication open. If you have questions, concerns, like I said, talk to your neighbors, talk to your merchandiser, talk to your banker, talk to the association, talk to the council. Our staff works super hard gathering information, disseminating information, making it make sense, helping us to explain it better. We can help you find answers.
Yes. Yes, you do. As association and council, you guys are incredibly involved with farming in North Dakota.
And talk to your family and friends, too. Don't bottle this stuff up. Make sure you're talking to people. If you're stressed, talk about it. You know, that your family, your neighbors, your friends, they're there for you. You know, we have resources too. You know, if you're not feeling good about stuff and you need to talk to someone, there are resources available. You know, NDSU, either through us. Again, make sure you're talking to people. You know, we're hearing some bad things happening in farm country. Don't bottle it up. talk about it, and we will work through it together.
One of those things that can be helpful is the AgriStress Helpline. It's available 24 hours, 7 days a week. You can reach that helpline at 833-897-2474. It is answered by folks who are in agriculture. They understand that you have cattle on the pasture, that you have crop in the bin that needs to be sold, and why these things are happening, and why you need some respect and kindness and caring when you call about your situation. So again, AgriStress Helpline, 833-897-2474. Gentlemen, thank you. Much appreciated for you coming in today.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. And when we come back, we're going to update radar. There is some heavy rain on radar to the south of the FM area. We'll talk about that and what the weekend looks like. And Bridget's got a couple of ag topics as well. All of that coming up. Don't go anywhere. And welcome back to Weather and Ag and Focus on this Friday. Finally, Friday, September 12th. And we're looking at temperatures outside in the mid-70s to upper 70s from the Fargo area northward. But you go in the Southern Valley, there's more clouds and even some decent rainfall. Temperatures there in the upper 60s. Quite a bit of rain now. Just south of the Hankinson-Fairmont line, you go over into Fergus area towards Alex. Steady rainfall there if you're going down 94, maybe going down to the cities. None of this severe, but as you get down into extreme northeastern parts of South Dakota, you're going to run into some stronger storms there. And again, that is all staying south of the FM area. You can see we're seeing the cloud cutoff line just about over the 94 corridor here with sunshine, all sunshine just north of town, and that's where the warmer temps are going to be. Now, as we head into the weekend, first off, tonight will be storm-free. All this moves off to the east, and then tonight will be storm-free, quiet, low to mid-60s. And then the weekend, if you have any outdoor plans, could this be the last weekend we get in the 80s around here? I mean, we're running out of time, but we're looking at mid to even upper 80s possible as we head into Sunday. A lot of humidity, so a lot of moisture in the air. And as we head into Sunday, late in the day Sunday, we're going to see storms in the eastern third of the state developing, and some of those could be on the strong to severe side. Now, earlier in the weekend out west, western part of the state into the central part of the state, they're going to see quite a bit of rain both Saturday and into early Sunday. So they'll get it earlier out west if you have any travel plans there. But and we'll stay dry until Sunday, late afternoon, evening. That's when we'll see our storm chances increase here.
I want to say thanks to one of our listeners. Tom made mention that, so my wife works for a car dealership here in town, and they are very nervous because normally once we get through corn and soybean harvest, farmers come in, and if they're going to trade vehicles or the wife needs a new car, et cetera, this is going to impact a lot of areas. But if you are a restaurant, doesn't matter if you're a small town cafe, if you're, you know, thinking everyone's coming for a special night out at Christmas time or Christmas parties, those may not be happening this year, because as we heard Jim mention, that is billions of dollars that will not be coming into our state coffers this year for the economy, whether it's legislatively, whether it's the business that we do and transact on a daily basis.
It's a trickle-down effect, you know?
Every time.
Yeah.
And the ag economy heavily fuels North Dakota. Back when we saw the housing bubble burst, et cetera, we were not as heavily impacted here because we can rely on varied amounts of economy with ag. Oil was high at the time, et cetera. Right. This one's going to hurt us. We will see that change over.
Well, and, you know, hopefully we can get this resolved.
We would love to.
Issue. Yeah.
I think everybody would love to. And as the guy said, it's it is the clock is ticking.
Yeah.
So we're going to need to see some movement very quickly. One of the last things to mention, let's end on a fun note, is butter is big, especially at state fairs. And we know that over at the Minnesota State Fair, they just recently wrapped up having their 72nd Princess K of the Milky Way. She is the state dairy princess, carved in a 90-pound block of butter. They do that in a 40-degree studio. We've even interviewed the sculptor here, Jerry Kulzler. But Iowa has a life-size butter cow. They've done it for over 100 years, and a replica is now going on display at the Smithsonian. The New York State Fair had a butter sculpture this year that was 900 pounds, and it was in celebration of the 125th anniversary of the wonderful Wizard of Oz by New York State native Frank Baum.
Cool. Good deal. Good deal. Well, we want to thank everybody for joining us here on Weather and Ag and Focus. Go out and have yourself a great weekend. Enjoy the weather. Today, again, a little rainy to our south, but it will improve over the weekend. And so for Bridget, myself, want to thank everybody, but don't go anywhere. Jay Thomas Show, it's coming up next.